Sorry, no market for that.
We've got a lot of shows in other languages for people all over the world. Folk music?
You're kidding, right? Who would sponsor that?
Can't make big bucks with programs people want to hear? You have to go to Co-op Radio for that. Community-owned radio. Now at 100.5 FM. The switch is on.
Like what you hear on Vancouver Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM? Donate to the station and become a member of Vancouver's only community-owned and run radio station. As a member-owned cooperative, Co-op Radio doesn't have one owner. We have about 30,000 owners. We don't accept commercial advertising. We generate our revenue through donations from our members and listeners. Donate to Co-op Radio, become a member, and help us continue to make independent alternative radio. Visit cooperadio.org to donate today.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, March 22nd, 2013. I am your host, Jackie McIntosh, and I'm joined here in studio today by my co-host, Allison Cole.
A combination of Alyssa.
I was trying to say Alyssa's not here, actually, but I'm joined here today by Allison Cole.
That's me.
And Tim Aretz.
Hello.
On the controls, welcome. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and compassionate living related news, events, interviews, and lifestyle and commentary. We need to keep you up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the respect that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at cooperadio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. For our first interview today, we have Dr. Olivier Berivel. He is currently Scientific Advisor for Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals and Canadian Horse Defense Coalition. He has been the Canadian National Contact for the International Network for Humane Education, or InterNiche, since 2003, assisting science students learning in their chosen field without harming animals. For our second interview, we will talk with Steve Hindy of SHARC, or Showing Animals Respect and Kindness. As the founder of SHARC, Steve's organization has been documenting and exposing pigeon shoots, rodeos, hunting, bullfights, government deer kills, and other forms of animal abuse since 1993. SHARC has dedicated supporters around the globe, and today we will be discussing the horrific pigeon shoots that take place in Pennsylvania, as well as talk about more about the organization in general. So we have a great show for you today, so please stay tuned.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to both of those interviews. Mm-hmm. The pigeon shoot, I've been learning about that this week with some information that you sent me. It's kind of blowing my mind.
Yeah.
And Dr. Olivier Berivel, he was at the Animal Advocacy Camp, and he gave just an amazing presentation. So I'm excited to have him on the show.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
To share more of that with everyone. Well, I have a review for you. And, mm-hmm. you know, I love watching cooking shows on television, but I no longer subscribe to the Food Network on TV. And part of the reason for that is because every time I put it on my TV, it's just meat, 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 and more meat. And then I change the channel to stave off the nausea. So when I heard about the vegan mashup cooking show produced by Delicious TV, I was eager to watch the whole first season, which I acquired on DVD. Vegan Mashup is a gift to the world by independent filmmaker Betsy Carson, and I say gift because it's high time that we have a cooking show on television that doesn't feature the roasting or grilling of dismembered body parts or the blending or melting of animal secretions for our sore eyes to see. This television show, on the opposite side of the spectrum, presents a bevy of enticing recipes that will wow any food lover and cook from beginner to advanced and from herbivore to omnivore. It's that easy and accessible to watch and to replicate the recipes on your own at home. And the show's tagline really seems to sum up the premise of it all: good fun, real food. Each episode of this series features a different food theme. We have party foods, holiday classics, healthy on a budget, and more. And each episode also features its three hosts who are well-known in the vegan cooking world, as well as some notable guest co-hosts. The three primary presenters are Tony Fiore, who does a totally vegetarian video podcast, plus has a book out by the same name. Miyoko Shinner, author of the famed Artisan Vegan Cheese Cookbook that came out last year, which I am personally loving these days, and Terry Hope Romero, who we all know from the Post-Punk Kitchen and her many various vegan cookbooks. I love these three hosts. They were a great choice for the series, and they all exude fun, upbeat, and knowledgeable personalities that keep you wanting to watch more. In fact, you know when you view an episodic TV show, and as soon as it ends, you can't wait to watch the next one? This is how I found myself to be anticipating the next episode with great glee and fervor as soon as one had ended. And then there's the catchy theme music as well that, as a Pavlovian effect, also drives you wanting more. So let's talk about the food. As I said, the dishes presented in this series will appeal to those with very little knowledge of cooking, to those of advanced experience. One easy recipe, for example, was the tofu BLT. At first, it seemed so basic that I wasn't interested in making it myself, but then I watched the process that Miyoko Shinner followed to produce these crispy, yummy slices of fried heaven, aka tofu, for the sandwiches, and I quickly jotted down the few ingredients to achieve this result, and it's definitely one that I'm going to be making soon. It's so easy to make. On perhaps a more advanced level, but still easy to prepare, were dishes such as rosemary potato pizza with roasted tomatoes, braised escarole and garlicky white beans, sukiyaki, and raspberry morning muffins. Are you drooling yet? These recipes look so delicious when our hosts are preparing them on the screen. And just by the fact that you're watching the creation of 3 to 4 dishes for each 24-minute episode, you know that they are going to be quick and easy to make. After seeing Miyoko prepare the Gruyere and pear crustade with a red wine glaze, I was so inspired that once again I jotted down the ingredients and method, and I made it myself. And Jackie, I brought some here for all of us to try. What was your impression of my Gruyere and pear crustade?
I remember that vaguely, and I was very
vague. It wasn't that long ago.
I know, but I don't really. You bring so much food that it's hard to remember every individual thing.
This was the homemade cheese, though.
I remember that being like a really delicious, savory kind of flavor, but also with like a freshness to it because of the pears.
And you thought the pears were tofurky, right? Wasn't that what you said?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know how you could have thought that.
They just looked like meat. I don't know. It was really bizarre, but it was obviously didn't taste like meat. It tasted really good.
Yeah, and that was just a really, just one example of the really delicious recipes that you see and you're like, I need to go make that.
Yeah.
Well, what I like about the recipes that the hosts have chosen to make is that they entail a wonderful variety of nutritious whole foods that anyone can prepare, but that you aren't typically going to see presented on any tedious Food Network show. And with interest in healthy plant-based eating on the up and rising, I believe a program like this fills a much needed spot in the plethora of all the other cooking shows that currently dominate the airwaves. You won't be finding this television series on the Food Network or Cooking Channel yet, but it has aired 400 times so far on various public television networks in the U.S. More stations are picking it up every month, and if you are so inclined to have your local PBS station air it on the show, you can find the contact info for your PBS station at pbs.org and ask them to broadcast Vegan Mashup. The DVD of the first season is also available for purchase at www.deliciousTV.com. The intended goal of Vegan Mashup is to share how easy, delicious, and fun plant-based cooking is, and without a doubt, you'll finish watching this show with wanting to run to the kitchen to reproduce these meals for yourself. I hope that this marks a beginning trend for vegan cooking shows to get broadcast on television. Food activism, as you should know, is perhaps the most effective way to spread compassionate living for the animals, for our health, and for the well-being of our total environment.
Wonderful. And I also, you were telling us earlier about this exciting new place that you tried eating at over the weekend, was it?
Yeah, so this was last weekend. My sister and I were we were bra shopping, actually, on Robson Street. Awesome. And so I had a Groupon to this place called Freshie, and I hadn't really heard of it before. You know, sometimes when Groupons come up, I'll check out the place, I'll check out their menu. I always want to try out new places, see if they're particularly veg-friendly or not. Usually they're not. But they usually do offer good deals with those vouchers, so I bought one for this place. And it was expiring soon, so we incorporated our shopping trip with a stop off for dinner at Freshie, which has three locations in Vancouver now. And I do believe it's a fairly new it's a franchise. There's a whole bunch of them in Toronto, so it looks fairly well established there. They have two in Edmonton and two in Ottawa, and now they have three in Vancouver. One's at Broadway and Cambie, so that's uptown, and they have two downtown on West Cordova Street and at 1185 West Georgia Street, which is where we went. So as the name suggests, it offers a selection of fresh food items, and these items can all be put together to create some really impressive and satisfying meals. When you go there, you'll see a menu of the different items that they have pre-made, like pre-set, that you can order. They've got like a lemongrass rice noodle or a brown rice noodle bowl that you could order, for example, that's got the base of either the noodles or the brown rice, and then certain toppings on them in lemongrass sauce. They have burritos there. They've got salads and they have soups as well. But when we got there, the guy was like, oh, is it your first time here? Yes. Okay. So why don't you just take this card? He gave us a laminated card. And I was extremely impressed to see all these options of all these different add-ons that you could have put on your dish. So, for example, we had artichoke hearts, bean sprouts, beets, chickpeas, broccoli, carrots, cilantro, corn, crispy wontons, roasted red peppers, sun-dried tomatoes, tofu, dried cranberries, almonds. The options are extensive and they range from very basic to fancy. But the best thing is, you're thinking, oh, if I chose all those options, which I did, like I think those are all the ones I chose. I chose a lot because I had this Groupon to use. It only came to about like less than $10, about $10 for this big rice bowl with all that stuff on it.
Was it with the Groupon or without?
That was without, actually, yeah, because the Groupon was it was $20 of worth of food, so it would only cost me $10. So that's a good point. So like even their basic lemongrass bowl was only like $5 or $6.99, and that had a bunch of stuff on it too. So I added even more stuff, and that is such a great deal at any salad bar in the city. You're not going to find a deal like that. So I just want to recommend that place. Okay. You know, when you're downtown and you don't know what to eat, either if you're on West Cordova and Howe or West Georgia and it was around Thurlow, check it out. It's Freshie. Their website is freshii.com.
Perfect. And that sounds delicious and like a good deal too.
Yeah.
So great.
Really good deal. So you are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And moving on, I've got some upcoming events for us. So first of all, coming up this weekend, something I'm super excited about is the annual Seattle Veg Fest. It's happening this Saturday, March 23rd and Sunday, March 24th from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. on both days at the Seattle Center's Exhibition Hall. That's where the Space Needle is. And the entrance is at 3rd Avenue North and Mercer Street in Seattle, Washington. Who here has been to Seattle Veg Fest before?
I have not, but I heard you're going this year, aren't you?
I go every year. Oh. Yeah. So I just wanted to see if I was talking to the converted already or not. So I did invite you, Jackie, but someone else picked it up. So we had an extra spot in the car there. So yeah, my friends and I go every year. And why do we go, you might ask? To eat a plethora of free food samples. It's vegetarian, but they have tons of vegan, over 500 different food samples to try of all the different up-and-coming vendors that are local to the Seattle, like the Northwest Pacific area, but then also more national. They all have, what I like too, is they usually have like the new stuff that's coming out. I know like Daya Cheese and Tofurky's got some new products coming out, and I really hope we'll be able to sample them there. But that's not all. There's cooking demonstrations by chefs from all over the country. Miyoko Shiner, who is on Vegan Mashup, who I love, is going to be there. So I'm staying for her demo, or she's actually doing a talk about artisan vegan cheese. You can also receive free health checks, including cholesterol, blood pressure, and glucose tests, and even artery scans, which I didn't even know about that before. And then they've got a lineup of nutritional advice from medical doctors doing talks. These are doctors that advocate vegetarian and vegan diets. And you can also join the Vegetarians of Washington to receive a free deluxe tote bag filled with free food and coupons. And this is actually a really great deal if anyone's ever interested in that. Tickets are $8 for adults and free for children 12 and under, and they are available at the door. And I'm going to go very quickly with one more event. There's a fundraiser bake sale for Rain Song Wildlife Sanctuary coming up on Thursday, March the 28th at noon. This is happening at Grandview Park, 1657 Charles Street, Vancouver. I believe Robin Piquel, who comes on our show sometimes, she's organizing this for Maya Mayhem, if you might remember her. She was on the show recently and chatted a little bit about this animal sanctuary that she was going to help and just take over running in Costa Rica. She's doing that now. She's there. They're organizing this fundraiser. If you want to help out with the fundraiser, not just attend the fundraiser yourself and do some baking, I would suggest going on Facebook and looking up Rain Song Wildlife Sanctuary Bake Sale and posting a message there saying that you want to help. So if you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thanks.
This is Reggae Music. Tune into the Reggae Show, Saturday 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. with your host George Barrett alongside Louis Sutherland, selecting the best roots rock, reggae, lovers rock, rock steady, dancehall, dub, ska music, news and views. The Reggae Show on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, Saturday 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Tune in, won't you?
So Dr. Olivier Baravel holds a PhD in biology from Dalhousie University and has been involved with various nonprofit animal protection organizations for more than 12 years. I was fortunate enough to interview Olivier, in which I spoke with him about his work advocating for the animals, and in particular his work assisting life sciences students to learn in their chosen field without harming animals, as well as his work with the Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals. I will share with you my interview with him. Hello, Dr. Olivier Baravel. Thank you for agreeing to speak with me today and share some of your insight.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Now, I remember at the Animal Advocacy Camp, furiously taking many notes during your speech, and there's just so much information and exciting alternatives. I'm wondering if you could briefly describe a few of these methods.
Yes, so the alternatives that are available cover a wide range of tools that include videos, models, mannequins and simulators, multimedia simulations, ethically sourced cadavers, clinical practice, in vitro labs, and even students' self-experimentation. So I think what people remember more about the talk maybe is some particular alternatives. For example, the simulator that I show that was in the form of a bodysuit that is laid on top of an actual person, and that allows students to examine and diagnose and perform trauma care. And this type of alternative was actually so realistic that the texture of the organs was accurately reproduced, and also even the smell associated with the trauma can be reproduced. So that's quite a high-tech alternative. Other examples include virtuality reality that was training surgeons and veterinarians to perform microsurgeries with a technology called haptic that reproduces the elasticity and pressure of the tissues as if the operator was practicing on a real body. And perhaps the state of the art in terms of learning alternatives is a training model that was designed by a neurosurgeon, Dr. Ahmad Aboud, that allows the perfusion of cadavers with realistic artificial blood and gives the cadaver the appearance that it's a live body with circulation and pulse. And the model is actually so lifelike that even surgeons cannot discriminate between it and a live body when they watch recorded procedures. So for live surgery practice, this is an excellent training tool, and that can be made totally ethical if it's performed on any ethically sourced cadavers, which are cadavers of animals who died naturally or by accident or were humanly euthanized due to medical reasons.
Those sound wonderful. It sounds like there's many options. Can you tell me, are these methods expensive and are they reliable?
No, actually, some of these alternatives are not expensive at all. Some of them are free. That's the example of some freeware programs that Internish has helped create. Or many other alternatives are low cost. And even in the case of alternatives that require a larger expense at the beginning, because they can be reused over and over and shared with students, even these more expensive alternatives over time are cost-effective. And in terms of reliability, more than 35 academic studies show that students using alternatives perform as well, if not better, than students who are learning in the traditional way through the harmful use of animals.
Can you share some of your own experiences and struggles that you experience as a science student?
Yes. Actually, I was always very interested in biology, and growing up, I performed many dissections on animals that I would find dead. For example, mice that would have been killed by the neighbor's cat. So I really had no problems with dissections per se. And after high school, I enrolled in a university program that focused in biology. But it's when I realized that we had to do dissections on animals who had been purposely killed for our education that I started to have ethical issues, and I expressed my concerns to the instructor, and I was met with mockery and threats about not passing the exam if I didn't comply. So that was a difficult time, and a year later, we were actually asked to start doing experimentation on live frogs and rats to learn physiology principles. And I again explained my concerns and asked for alternative learning options, and was told that if I didn't want to perform the experiments, I just had no place in biology and should quit.
Well, that's pretty disheartening to hear. Can you share some of the major successes that Internish has accomplished, and how widely used are these alternatives?
Yes, so Internish has been supporting and catalyzing many initiatives to develop and implement alternatives in various countries across the world, from Africa to the Middle East, China, and Eastern Europe. And so to give you some particular examples of this work, a growing number of university departments in Russia and Ukraine have signed formal agreements about the use of alternatives with Internish, along with a German group called Doctors Against Animal Experiments. And these agreements result in an estimated 40,000 animals who are saved annually. And of course, this also allows to save the university money by implementing these alternatives. Another example comes from the work of Internish in India, where Internish organized across the country training of teachers on the use of a free pharmacological software, and distributed 4,000 copies of this software. And as a result, we estimate that about 16,000 lice, animal lice, are saved per year at three universities. And we estimate that over the whole nation, it would be 10 to 100 times more animals saved.
Wow, that's great to hear. Can you also share some of the reasons that some universities have for resisting using these wonderful alternatives?
Yes, so I think the refusal to implement this alternative, it's a mix of different factors, but it's very likely attributed to a long tradition of harmful animal use in education, also an investment in the status quo, and possibly a resistance to change, as well as a lack of awareness of the pedagogical superiority of this human methods. And I think that as more progressive institutions are providing exemplary implementation of these alternatives, we are going to see other institutions to follow, because they will have to follow suit if they want to maintain their standing or their leadership position.
And now you're also scientific advisor for Canadians for Ethical Treatment of Food Animals. How did you become involved with them, and what is the primary goal of CEPFA?
Well, I've been involved with various animal welfare issues in the last 10 years, but I've really focused more recently on farm animal issues because more than 95% of the abuse that is suffered by animals is caused by the meat, egg, and dairy industries. So CEPFA, it's a non-profit organization that was established to examine intensive animal agriculture practices, and it focuses on educating the public and seeks to improve the welfare of farm animals while they're on farm, in transport, at auction, or during slaughter. So I was brought on at CEPFA during actually what was one of the largest cases of cruelty to farm animals in Canada history, where 27,000 pigs were deliberately starved to death at a factory farm in Manitoba. So at the time, Toile Francois, who is now working for Mercy for Animals, Canada, was involved with CEPFA, and together we conducted a parallel investigation that documented the conditions in the barns as well as the state of the pigs, the pig remains, to determine that they were starved, because we were trying over that the cruelty was intentionally inflicted, and eventually the producer was found guilty, fined, and ended a lifetime ban on the ownership of animals.
Well, that's great to hear. And what do you think it will really take to push the Canadian government to elicit these changes to the current horrific farm animal system?
That's a really good question. CEPFA has been exposing problems with the animal agriculture industry for over 20 years, and we still have to see the government amend any of the federal regulations in any significant way. And we can say the same about the provincial level, where there's really no significant changes that would be really important for animal welfare. So I think that the significant changes at the government levels will only occur after agribusiness industries and retailers will have actually implemented changes because of consumers' demands. So I think that's what's the most important is actually the public and how they can influence what industry and retailers are doing and what and influence their practices.
Okay, and so what can individuals, I guess, do to help in this?
When the retailers, they have the power to end some of the most inhumane factory farming practices, but really consumers can help prevent cruelty every single time that they sit down to eat by making lifestyle changes and adopting a compassionate diet. I think that's really one of the most significant things that everybody can do.
Wonderful. Can you also please tell me the most effective ways that science students can go about advocating for change in their university toward a system of learning that doesn't harm animals?
Yes, certainly. So I think what's the most important is for students to learn about their rights, to be provided alternatives, and after they've learned about that, help educate others, other students and the teachers about these alternatives and the quality of learning through these alternatives. So there are many resources that are available to help. Just to give you an idea of some of these of these resources, Interniche provides very comprehensive information about the pedagogical and scientific advantage of the alternatives through a book, From Genetics to Computer Mouse, that is available for free download on our website. We also provide an online alternative database that gives over 1,000 human teaching and training tools that are fully detailed, and also provide an academic studies database with more than 1,500 references, abstract, and full papers to be scheduled for inclusion. So there are a lot of resources that can help students to learn about the alternatives, to find what they are, how they can be implemented. We also maintain an alternative loan system that allows students and teachers to borrow alternatives for free, and they can try them for a period of time, and then they just send them back to us. And of course, we are happy to provide advice, resources, and practical help to support any initiatives that goes in the direction of modernization of education and alternative methods.
Okay, great. So it sounds like people should definitely check out InterNiche's website, and that is interniche.org, correct?
That's right.
Okay. Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Olivier, and sharing all the wide range of information that you have about improving the lives of animals in multiple capacities.
Thank you very much for having me.
You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I have some news for us now. So, Jackie, did you happen to hear about the incident that was on the news this week? Is kind of local, happened in Vancouver, or sorry, in Kelowna. An SUV driver hit a dog. Did you know about that one before?
I actually didn't hear of that story, but I've heard of similar stories where it seems to be a trend.
You know where I'm going here. So, the RCMP are looking for this SUV driver. So apparently, Kelowna resident Lloyd Manchester, he was walking his dog of 12 years, and this was last month when a blue SUV started backing out of the driveway towards them. He tried moving the dog to safety, but he was too late. The vehicle crushed Jake's hips and injured Manchester's heel in the process. So the driver initially stayed on the scene, but refused to lift a finger, apparently, to help the bleeding pet. Manchester said, well, I need to get my dog to a vet. And the driver said, well, my SUV is really expensive and it's got leather interiors and I'm not putting that dog in my SUV. Instead, the driver promised to bring a veterinarian back onto the scene. He drove off and he never came back. So the veterinarian tried operating on the dog the next day, but guess what? He died. His internal injuries were too severe. So now the RCMP are looking for this man who ran off, left this dog to die because he didn't want to get his upholstery dirty, which I cannot understand. And anyone with information is invited to come forward and help with them identify the hit-and-run driver. They only have a few vague details to go on. The suspect is described as a 50 to 55-year-old white male with short brown hair. He was driving a blue newer model SUV with wide tires. Clark said that under the law, pets, and this is Constable Chris Clark, said that under the law, pets are considered properties, as we all know very well here on Animal Voices. And so the most the driver will likely face is only a fine under the Motor Vehicle Act, which I think is despicable. But at least they are looking for this person. Anyone with information on this incident can contact the Kelowna RCMP detachment at 250-762-3300. So I encourage people to look for, you know, new SUVs with clean upholstery that haven't...
with a middle-aged man driving it, apparently.
Anyways, that's that story. Next in the news is a raccoon dog fur is being sold as fake fur. You know, this happens over and over again, but this story just came out, came to us this week by the local nonprofit organization, the Fur Bearer Defenders. A leading New York area retailer called Century 21 was recently busted by an investigator from the Humane Society of the United States for selling real raccoon, dog, and rabbit fur garments marked as faux fur. Some of the items were manufactured under the well-known designer mark, designer label Marc Jacobs. And we know that mislabeling like this is routine, right? It's not really, especially here on the Animal Voices show, it's something that we talk about quite a lot. It's not something that's a surprise to us, but I think it's still, it can still be considered to be a surprise for people that buy these items, thinking specifically that they're paying for a certain product and they're getting dead animal on them. Even there's U.S. big U.S. retailers that fall into this mislabeling routine. Other retailers that have been busted for false fur claims include Stein Mart, Rainbow, K-Girl, and Kitson. Major Canadian retailers have also been caught advertising fake fur when the products were made from real fur. In fact, last year, an investigation by the Fur Bearer Defenders revealed that several coats sold online through Sears.ca and TheBay.ca that were advertised as faux fur actually contained real animal fur, and a sweater that was bought at a store in Winners contained animals, contained labels on the item claiming that the fur was both fake and real, but it was actually 100% real fur. I know that sometimes it can often be difficult to tell whether your fur is real or not. Buyer beware, right? Do not go to a store and buy a garment seeing that it's labeled fake fur. That label means nothing. Yeah, we have no standard labels.
Don't buy fur fake or real because it likely is real or has real bits on it. So,
yeah, and that's what all I have for today's news.
Thank you, Allison. All right, so today on the show we have Steve Hindy to speak about the horrific pigeon shooting that is taking place in Pennsylvania, as well as a few other issues. Steve is the founder of the organization SHARK, or Showing Animals Respect and Kindness, a group focused on ending animal exploitation in areas such as hunting and animal shooting, zoos, circuses, rodeos, and many more. Hello, Steve, and thank you for joining us today.
Very happy to be here. Thank you very much.
Oh, no problem. Can you tell us, tell me actually about how SHARK was originated and what SHARK's primary purpose and mission is?
Well, SHARK was originated because most of the organizations at the time were mainly focused on protests. And while I think protests certainly have their place, I was concerned that there wasn't enough actual documentation of abuses, and I felt that, you know, like I say, a protest has its place, but if people can actually look at what it is that you're concerned about, be it a rodeo or let's say a pigeon shoot, which we work on, or bullfighting or slaughterhouses or whatever it is, rather than us talking about it, for instance, there's no way that I can adequately in words explain to you the horror of a bullfight or the horror of a live pigeon shoot. It can't be done. I have read pieces by good writers. I remember before my first pigeon shoot, I read a piece by a guy named Don Barnes, a very talented writer, who had gone to a live pigeon shoot and wrote about it in stirring terms. I mean, it was really upsetting to read what he wrote. And I really thought that what he had written must have been overwritten, considerably overwritten. And so I went to see it for myself and found out that you can't put the horror of it into words. And so by us going out and actually video documenting or using still cameras also, and then bringing those images to the public or to the courts, to legislators, to the media, to now to the internet, that's the way that you can really, you know, people, they then connect with that issue. They look right into the victim's eyes, and they make their own decision of their own free will as to the severity of what's going on.
So it's all about seeing to believe. And what tools are used to help with this mission?
Well, we use cameras and, good cameras. Cameras often that have very high-powered lenses, because now a lot of our targets, they try to put distance between us. We are using, I am using aircraft on occasion, remote control aircraft, because now they oftentimes try to put fences and walls and tree lines in between us. And we've got devices that can raise cameras 30 feet into the air where you can still control them. So, you know, we can raise them 30 feet in the air, and if that doesn't work, we can put them onto an aircraft and raise them hundreds of feet into the air. We've got boats that give us, you know, a whole different range of accessibility. We've got cameras that sometimes we wear on our heads for personal security, because a lot of times these people will, you know, they'll sneak up on you and they'll pull stuff, or they'll do something to you and then run to the police and claim that we're the ones that started it. So we have a lot of technology that we try to make use of to protect ourselves and to get animal issues out in the public.
Well, it definitely sounds very high-tech, and there's not really anywhere for them to hide, which is good. Can you share some of SHARC's major victories with us?
Well, you know, that the graphic, very disturbing video images that we shot of bullfighting forced Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola to stop sponsoring bullfights over a decade ago. And you know, it might be a surprise to people in the States, because Coke and Pepsi are always trying to whitewash their corporate image. But they were, corporations had been sponsoring bullfights for longer than I had been alive, well over a half century. We saw old pictures of bull rings with Coke and Pepsi ads in them. And so we went after, you know, we went down to Mexico. We shot a number of bullfights, which is when we found out that they were advertising. And we went after both, and Coke and Pepsi dropped those sponsorships after decades of supporting bullfighting. We forced live pigeon shoots out of Illinois. We're still working on it in Pennsylvania, which is a whole other environment. Mm-hmm. You know, we've forced a lot of change in rodeo. They don't do as much shocking of animals as they used to, because they're worried that our cameras will be watching them, and they often are. Frankly, not only do I forget, I try to forget some of the things that we've done in the past, because it's associated with such disturbing cruelty. But we have enjoyed, you know, we've enjoyed a fair amount of success. We've, you know, closed a number of pigeon shoots down, even in Pennsylvania. There's a lot less people at the pigeon shoots in Pennsylvania right now than there used to be, because they don't know when we're going to show up. And a lot of these people, the pigeon shoots, for instance, is not a cheap activity. It's for people who have money. And people who have money are oftentimes doctors and lawyers and this kind of thing, and they really don't... They're sick psychopaths. They're really disgusting people, but they can't let the real world know how sick and disgusting they are.
Yeah.
And if we find out, the world definitely will know how sick and disgusting they are. So some of these people that are still coming in, you know, they cover up their license plates. Mm-hmm. Some of them wear masks, believe it or not, is really something to see.
Steve, before the show, this is exactly the word that came up for me when we were discussing this, is I was watching some of the videos on your website, and I'm like, what are these people? They're like breeding like psychopathy, you know, it's like that's all that it is these grown adults and some children as well go out there and shoot these creatures, just like they just shoot pigeons. And then there's even a video on your website of someone masturbating over it. Like, it's disgusting. It's like bizarro world to me, and I just don't understand it.
When I say psychopaths, I'm not just name calling. When I call them sick and twisted,
they actually are.
It's not name calling if it's true.
Oh yeah,
and you're right. Yes, you got that.
You got the guy
masturbating over the place where the pigeons were being killed. It is that sick. But I'll tell you what's even worse. We just today uploaded a video of a kid, a little kid. He can't be more than like 8 years old at one of these shoots, and he's not the first one that we've gotten. These people will bring their kids, and they're actually working to teach them that this is acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps the very worst part of it all is that in the United States today, you've got politicians, and I'm talking about significant politicians, who are accepting campaign money from these people and are willing to let it go on. The district attorney of Berks County is a guy named John Adams. My guess is that you might have seen one of the videos where you had two punks that were just literally torturing pigeons, slamming them to the grounds, ripping them apart, throwing wounded pigeons up in the air and shooting them again, kicking them like soccer balls. Berks County District Attorney John Adams has that video footage and will not press charges. Bucks County, Pennsylvania, District Attorney David Heckler has similar footage available to him. And besides the animal abuse, you're talking about people who will commit life-threatening attacks on us. I mean, I've been attacked with,
They're already aggressive and violent, so why wouldn't they? They would just extend their violence that they do to the animals to you.
Right, and yet these district attorneys, the Pennsylvania State Police, local police jurisdictions, the governor of Pennsylvania, all refusing to do anything.
That's just horrible. That's just awful.
It is the way it is today. Now, yeah. And Pennsylvania is not the only one. Pigeon shoots are not the only issue. You go to the rodeo and you film things that are just, if you saw somebody doing it to your family dog, you know, you'd probably try to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
This is serious stuff.
Well, it goes back to our earlier issue of just saying, you know, animals are unfortunately still considered property, you know, unfortunately. Are we okay if I move on to the next question? Sorry,
sure.
See, we just don't have a lot of time. So I have to say, I consider myself to be quite aware of most issues related to animal torture and cruelty. Yet I'd never heard of these pigeon shootings that Shark is working so hard to end. As I learned more, it was just, like you said, completely heartbreaking. Can you describe when you first learned about this horrific cruelty and how it impacted you?
I learned about this in around 1990. It's when I read that article by a fellow named Don Barnes, who wrote this great article about pigeon shooting. I was at the time a hunter and a fisherman, and I was preparing to go. I had a boat on Long Island. I was a shark fisherman. I was preparing to go there, so I stopped off at a pigeon shoot in Pennsylvania to see for myself. And that's when I found out that, you know, even the considerable talents of this writer were inadequate to describe the horror of pigeon shoots. And over a year's time, it took me about a year, because I had 30 years into hunting and fishing, and it took me about a year, but I decided that I should not do it anymore. I should hunt animal abusers instead of animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing that ever since. So actually back then, the media used to report on pigeon shoots. Today, the Pennsylvania media rarely reports on it, especially in the places where it's going on. The media is quite complicit with the pigeon shooters. And for instance, the Reading Eagle, which is the major newspaper in Berks County, will not write about the pigeon shoots. And when you have that, when you have the elected officials refusing to do their jobs, the media refusing to do their jobs, I mean, you're frankly as a locality or even as a nation, you're in a heap of trouble. And that's what we are in the United States. We've kind of greased our own skids for mediocrity at best.
Yeah, it's all so shocking, and as you said, it impacted your life so dramatically. So I think, you know, people seeing these videos for sure can impact them. And I also want to kind of lead off that question. Living in a city like Vancouver, where pigeons and crows are a prevalent part of everyday life, people tend to look down on them as if they're our pests. Yet, as I'm guessing all of us do, we see them as social, beautiful, sentient beings. And if people argue that the pigeon shooting is a method of pest control, how do you respond to that? And what suggestions would you give to help people cohabitate with these beautiful creatures without conflict or disturbance?
Well, anybody who claims that that a pigeon shoot is pest control is either completely uninformed or is lying. You don't take. Let's pretend for a moment that the pigeon is a pest. They're not. But the last thing you would do, for instance, let's say you want to eliminate cockroaches. The last thing you would do is take cockroaches from one place and take them to another place where you're going to have a cockroach stomp, and maybe half of the cockroaches or a third of the cockroaches or 10% of the cockroaches get away. All you've done is spread the cockroaches. And that's what happens in pigeon shoots. They take them from one or more places, like cities where they're captured, or places where they're raising them, and they do raise them for pigeon shoots in many cases. And then you take them someplace else where a certain percentage of them are going to get away. How is that population control? Second, if you want to talk about pests, who is it that contributes more to the pollution of our planet or the depletion of its resources? Humans, pigeons, or crows? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's outrageous
humans
to claim.
Humans or pests?
Well, we certainly have more of an impact causing the real problems of our world than pigeons or crows. So are we going to start eliminating ourselves? Of course we're not going to do that. So if we're the ones who are supposedly the smart species on this planet, don't we have some responsibility? Are we really so arrogant? And I think most people are not. I think most people, the vast majority of people, are completely opposed to these killing contests that go on, whether it be pigeons, coyotes, crows, you name it, wolves. But you've got this fairly small percentage of the population that is very outspoken, very boorish, very bullying. Let me give you an example. The best example, the National Rifle Association. The leadership of the National Rifle Association should, in my opinion, be declared domestic terrorists and either put out of business or very possibly jailed. I mean, and the National Rifle Association is backing pigeon shoots completely in Pennsylvania. They are the only reason that pigeon shoots still continue in Pennsylvania. And for any of your listeners who want to see it, you can go to YouTube and simply search Pennsylvania pigeon shoot, and they'll come up by the hundreds. The National Rifle Association, you want to talk about a pest species, that would be the leadership of the National Rifle Association. People like Ted Nugent, a pigeon shooter, John C. Sigler, former NRA president and current board member, a pigeon shooter, Leo Holt, former NRA board member, a pigeon shooter. These are slob shooters. These people don't even rise to the level of a poacher. A poacher may shoot a deer and actually use the deer. These people blast away lives by the hundreds or thousands and then dump them in a pile to rot. You want to talk about pest species? Go to the NRA headquarters. That's the pest. Pigeons are war heroes. I mean, they save many, many, many lives, allied lives, human lives, crows, extremely intelligent animals, as are pigeons, very intelligent animals. I love crows. I love pigeons. Disease-carrying? Nonsense. You want to find diseases, especially mental diseases, go to the NRA headquarters. You'll find your fill.
Okay, and I'm also aware that Shark does some rescues on those few animals that you can save from the atrocities that humans inflict on them. Can you share briefly just where these animals end up in the rescue and recovery process?
Well, we rescue a certain number, but the ones who actually survive the severe trauma of their abuse is unfortunately quite low. I don't think it's more than 10 or 20%. And so we're not able to rescue all that many to begin with, and then, you know, a small percentage of them survive. They stay with rehabbers, especially the people who really like pigeons, rehabbers and who then will give them to people who will, you know, take care of them for the rest of their lives. But these birds, and one thing that it's important to understand is that these animals, when they show up at these shoots, when they're brought there in the crates, they're emaciated. They are in terrible physical condition to begin with. Many of them are, they get shocked on the way out of the box. There's a little plate on the bottom that actually shocks them to try and force them to fly. But many of, and it's a little catapult. It kind of tosses them up a couple, 3 feet, so that instinctively their wings oftentimes will open up because, you know, because they're getting thrown up in the air. But many of them can't even fly. Some of them have never flown free if they were raised for the chutes. And many of them are just so sick and emaciated that they can't fly, and they're blasted on the ground. That's the sportsmanship of live pigeon chutes by psychopaths. And so, you know, we do rescue some. Few of them survive. It's not hard, unfortunately, to find enough homes for them.
All right. And finally, what can our listeners do to help Shark end these terrible acts of cruelty toward animals?
You know, you could go to nracruelty.com. We've got the NRA's 800 number, or you could call them up and tell them what you think. This is the problem with so much corruption in the United States. Whether you're talking rodeos or horse slaughter or the capture and subsequent slaughter of America's wild horses, you know, whatever it is, there is almost nobody to go to. The local police departments, pigeon shooting, live pigeon shooting, only occurs in places where there is rampant corruption. The police are in on it. The mayors, the district attorneys, in the case of Pennsylvania, the governor. There is nobody to go to. There is no one. And so I'm, you know, that's maybe the most frustrating part of this is that all we can do almost is as individuals, well, there's certain companies that we can boycott, like with rodeos. Coke and Pepsi are involved in those. Coors Beer. The NRA number, if somebody wanted to quick jot it down. Can I say it?
Sure, quickly. Yeah.
800-672-3888.
Okay.
But, you know, is for people to act responsibly on their own. That's the first step. Please don't go to rodeos. Don't give them your money.
Mm-hmm.
You'll go in, and if you're a caring person, you'll be disgusted, as in the case of bull rings. You know, a lot of people go to bullfights, and they say, oh, I walked out. It's too late. You gave them their money.
Well, and I guess the biggest thing people could do is just look on your website, which is sharkonline.com, and they can, you know, donate some money or possibly help you out in the campaign. Unfortunately...
The site is actually sharkonline.org.
Oh, .org, sorry. So we just got to wrap up. Steve, I'm sorry to cut you short. I think we'll have to have you on the show again.
Interview.
It was a great interview, and you're a great speaker and so compassionate. So thank you so much for joining us on the show, and please keep up the amazing work that you do. And like we said earlier, please check out sharkonline.org.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Next week's show will be a freestyle show where we'll be sharing with you a mishmash of surprise interesting items and inviting you to call into the show if you wish. And one thing that we can tell you is that Tim will be presenting a review of the new cookbook Vegan Secret Supper by Marita Anderson. So we're closing the show now with a song called Don't Make Your Body a Graveyard by Moore Shin at the Live Wire. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. Remember, you can catch us on the podcast at animalvoices.org, and we'll be putting that up shortly. Remember to be kind to the animals.
Are not only dangerous because they lead to wrong conclusions, but furthermore, they retard clinical investigation, which is the only valid kind.
It's like the government protects for deception, activists arrested for protesting, animal tested for deception is flawed, tested for cures for cancers on rats, this hypocrisy is ignored and intentions corrupt. When they find 50 cures on rats, what not work on us? Experiments and monkeys if the rice turns up, to tip it caught to the next. Imagine if the results are all right till they stop these torturous tests, until they shut down Oxford labs and hate to lessen to all life forms of sentience, feelings and intelligence are treated with respect and reverence. I stop eating burgers cause meat is murder. This vegan verbal demon rap to beat this murder. And factory farming's reality's alarming. Ourselves, animals and environment we're harming. Producing meat causes more carbon dioxide than the world transport combined. And uses more land, more water and more resources than growing plants for food. Could you afford to ignore this? Swallow fast food chains, clog your arteries and veins, to combat the poor animals, short lives in pain.
What animal would choose to spend their entire life in captivity if they had a choice?
If you care about yourselves, animals in the planet, yo, they'll make your body a graveyard. If you want to aid life, then kick the meat habit, yo, they'll make your body a graveyard. If you care about yourselves, animals in the planet, yo, they'll make your body a graveyard. Graveyard. If you wanna aid life, then kick the meat habit, yo. Then make your body a graveyard. They kill 4 million cows, 9 million pigs, 50 million sheep, 900 million chickens a year. It kills from meat to meat. UK demand is an import from overseas. Even the United Nations admit that overgrazing is causing deforestation. Impacts are devastating. And the fur trade, skin animals alive is evil. Furs are beautiful on animals, but ugly on people. So from intensive farms to the abattoirs, animals and farms live a short life of torture and harm. After a short life of being mistreated and abused, they arrive to the slaughterhouse, frightened and confused, beaten and shattered at if they don't go easily, rushed by the workers who put unconscious feebly. And if they're not done properly, they await when they're put to death, hanging upside down with shackles, chained by their legs. And if a lifetime of torture and abuse weren't enough, then the last thing they see is their throats being cut.
It has been said that if we had to kill our own meat, we would all be vegetarians.
If you care about yourselves, animals and the planet, yo, then make your body a graveyard. If you wanna aid life, then kick the meat habit, yo, then make your body a graveyard. If you care about yourselves, animals and the planet, yo.
Last week, I sent out by podcast a pathetic audio press conference from a New York City symposium. I called it Poison Flag. Two U.S. sailors tell their stories of being soaked with radioactivity aboard the aircraft carrier USS Ronald Reagan during the Fukushima nuclear accident in Japan. The sailors tell a harrowing tale of being exposed to radiation blowing from Fukushima over a period of 2 months as close as 1 mile from shore. They were not told of the accident until weeks later, were never properly tested for exposure, received no preventative treatment, and even now get no medical help from the Navy. Allegedly forced to sign waivers releasing the Navy from any responsibility, the pair are among more than 100 American sailors suing TEPCO, the Japanese nuclear plant operator. If you missed that, find it on the Radio EcoShock website at ecoshock.org.